This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The day today is April 23rd. The interview is taking place in Tacoma, Washington, and is being conducted by Donna Melanie. What is your full name?
Gunnar Johannes Malmin.
When and where were you born?
I was born April 9th, 1903, in a small town called Thompson, Iowa.
What were your parents' names? Could you tell me something about them, what their jobs were?
Okay, my father was Rasmus Malmin. My mother was Gabriella, born Ås. And they both came from Norway, were married in Norway. My father was educated at the university as a clergyman, had studied Hebrew a good deal. My mother was a school teacher and became acting principal of a girls' school where they had usually had a theologian as principal, so she was asked to go to the university and study theology, which she did back in the early 90s. She had not had any Hebrew, so it was suggested that she might get this student to tutor her. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of a beautiful friendship, which lasted for over 50 years.
Okay. How many children in your family, your brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters and a brother.
Mm-hmm. And what were their names?
Well, the one sister had been a missionary in China and married a pastor over there, so she was Sophie and Mrs. Herman Larson. Mm-hmm. And my other sister taught at St. Olaf College for about 45 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. And she was Dr. Marie Meyer. And my brother was Dr. Olaf G. Malmin, who was also a pastor and editor and professor at the seminary. The two have passed away. My sister at St. Olaf is still living.
Uh-huh. Do you remember anything about your grandparents? Did you know your grandparents?
I met my mother's mother when I was over studying in Norway. Mm-hmm. She's the only one that I ever knew.
Mm-hmm. Did you know anything about them, about what work they did
well,
in Norway?
My father's father was a baker in Haugesund, Norway, and both he and his wife were very devout Christian people. They started the Sunday school work in Haugesund, were very active in their support of mission and so on. And my mother's father had been he was a shipper and connected with the bank in Haugesund, and was also what they call lensmann, that is a combination of judge and policeman, really. Mm-hmm. In the community there. So he was a more of the government official type of person. So that's about that.
Okay. Do you know why your parents came to the U.S., or do you know anything about that period?
Well, my father, as I said, was educated as a clergyman. Mm-hmm. And about that time it seemed like there was an oversupply of clergymen in Norway and a great shortage over in this country. So a friend of his who had come a few years before him persuaded him to come over here and become a clergyman among the Norwegian people. Mm-hmm. Preaching in Norwegian, of course. Mm-hmm. At that time. They came in 1892.
Do you remember him telling you anything about his experiences of traveling over here, or anything outstanding?
Oh, about it? I don't know, Dorothy. Can you think of anything about the travel? I don't know. Not particularly.
That little story about them coming to London, and they thought that they were buying apples.
Oh, yes, they saw in, I suppose, or was it Glasgow? I can't remember now where they went. I'm probably London. they saw this beautiful fruit and that they'd never seen before, and bought some and were rather disappointed at the bitter taste of tomatoes.
Oh, thinking they were apples.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you tell me something about the community then, after, when your parents came, and where did they settle?
Well, they first went to Yankton, South Dakota, where my father served a small congregation in town and several country congregations. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a change for them from living in Oslo or Christiania to coming out there to this rather small town. They tell about the first time they were invited out to dinner to one of the members of the congregation. They talked about it and said, well, dinner in the evening, we really should dress up for this. So my father put on his tails and white tie, and my mother a long dress with long white gloves. And then they walked arm in arm over to this place, and they said that if they had been animals that had escaped from the zoo, they couldn't have attracted more attention. So they discovered that wasn't quite the way they did things in Yankton, South Dakota in 1892.
Oh, that's quite a memory. Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up then?
Well, to begin with, in this small town of Thompson, Iowa, mm-hmm. and later on in Decorah, Iowa, where my father was a editor and professor at Luther College. Mm-hmm. And then later on they moved to St. Paul, Minnesota, where he was again editor and theological professor.
Mm-hmm. Was it Norwegian communities then? There were Norwegian people in the area.
Everything was Norwegian there, not only the church, but the stores, for that matter. Uh-huh. Of course, they could talk English, but yes. They preferred to talk Norwegian. And we always talked Norwegian at home. In fact, my father insisted on that. And we objected at the time, but appreciated it later on.
Yes. Could you tell me about your education then? Where did you go to school?
Well, when I was just ready to start high school, then we had moved to Decorah, Iowa. So I started high school at the Luther College Preparatory Department, which at that time was very Norwegian also. Mm-hmm. And then I continued at Luther College, graduated there in 1923. Then the following year, I had this scholarship from the American Scandinavian Foundation and the Carnegie Institution of Department of Historical Research to make a survey of materials in the archives of the Scandinavian countries, materials of that would have any bearing on American history. And so that was in the school year of 1923 and 24. Mm-hmm. So that got me kind of off into the area of history, mm-hmm. Which I was supposed to follow up by doing graduate work in history, and threw it all overboard to go into music instead. Mm-hmm. But I did. I had so much material with me there that I was almost forced into doing quite a bit of work with history. And
did you publish some things then?
Yes, I have several publications there of the American, through the American Scandinavian, Norwegian American Historical Association, which I'm a charter member, that was established in 1925. And also, that was just the year of the 100th centennial. It was a centennial of Norwegian-American immigration, so this was very timely material.
Oh, yes.
So the Norwegian newspaper, the Koraposten, published a series of, I think, over 20 articles that I wrote on Norwegian immigration, using some of this material which I had found in Norway.
Uh-huh. Did you go to any of the other Scandinavian countries at that time?
Yes, I spent part of the time in Sweden and mm-hmm. part of the time in Denmark, mm-hmm. examining archive material there. Mm-hmm. In Sweden, for example, the material about the Swedish colonies on the Delaware, mm-hmm. and the in Denmark, the Danish colony in the West Indies, mm-hmm. diplomatic correspondence, and a variety of material.
When did you come to Pacific Lutheran University then?
Came here in the a variety of material.
When did you come to Pacific Lutheran University then?
Came here in the fall of 1937.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I taught at PLU for 32 years. Interrupted, however, by this 1 year that when I was in Norway as an exchange professor, and also a year that I spent as a professor of music at Camrose College in Alberta, Canada. Mm-hmm. So 30 years at PLU.
When you first started, what do you remember how many students there were approximately? What size was the university at that time?
College it was then, Pacific uh-huh. Lutheran College. It was a junior college at that time, 2 years of college and 4 years of high school. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the total enrollment would have been around 300. Mm-hmm. During the war, it dropped down to about 125, I believe, something like that.
Is there anything in particular that you remember about those early years of
Well, I guess the main thing is that we had no money.
Uh-huh.
Like the treasurer of the college used to say, well, 1/3 of our money we get from the students, 1/3 of the money we get from the church. Mm-hmm. And then he stopped significantly. Well, what about the other third? Well, we whistle for that. And we had, of course, no regular paychecks. We charged our groceries at the local, the Dahl grocery store. Uh-huh. And when the grocery supply store, whatever, Western Groceries, had to have a little money from the Dahls, then Mrs. Dahl went over to the college. Oh, can you possibly give me a little money? And they would pay her some money and prorate it among the faculty members, and we never saw any money, really.
Oh, it was like that was really the company store then, wasn't it?
It was, really, uh-huh. Yeah. But we were very happy in all of it and had a really wonderful fellowship in the small faculty of perhaps 12 or 15 teachers. No one had any money, so we were all in the same boat.
Yes. Okay. There is a... Could you tell me something about the Choir of the West, when that formed, and what your participation was?
Well, the Choir of the West was started in, I suppose, 1927, I believe it was, or the fall of 26, perhaps, by Joseph Edwards, who was my immediate predecessor here. And I took over then in the fall of 37. And directed it in all for 27 years, up that much of the 32 years that I was here.
Mm-hmm. I understand they had gone to Norway at the choir head?
Yes, we went, that was the first tour to Norway. It was in the summer of 63, when we toured, gave concerts for a month in Norway, and for about a week in Denmark, then a few concerts in Germany, and a couple in southern France, and then a little sightseeing in other countries.
Mm-hmm. Then there's another choir that you've been director of, too.
Normana Male Chorus. Male Chorus has played quite an important role in Norwegian music life. And so when these Norwegians came to this country, one of the first things they wanted to do was to get a chorus going. Mm-hmm. So there have been Norwegian male choruses started in the Midwest. Some of them are over 100 years old. And out here, ours is one of the oldest. I think Portland is the very oldest, established in 1886. And the Normana Male Chorus was established in 1888. The Seattle Norwegian Male Chorus in 1889, and then others in other cities on the West Coast. And of course, another thing then these choruses, both from the Midwest and out here, wanted to get together to have what we call Sangerfests. Mm-hmm. And on the West Coast, that began with the first Sangerfest in 1903, and has been continuing ever since. And I directed the Sangerforbund, as we call it, as director-in-chief, and also as assistant director-in-chief for quite a number of years. I started directing the Normanna Male Chorus in 1945, and I'm still directing that.
What do they, during the concerts and such, what do they wear? How do they dress for the concerts?
Well, when, to begin with, they wore the type of garment which they were accustomed to in Norway, which was white trousers and a blue jacket, and then a white singer's cap. And now they've gone over for more, lately they've been wearing white jackets and dark trousers, more of an American type of garb.
And is there's a woman's auxiliary there too?
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh. Yes, we.
When were they formed?
The auxiliaries? Oh, I think in most cases very soon after the main chorus, because they were accustomed to that they should help the men mm-hmm. with different money-raising projects and mm-hmm. like rummage sales and mm-hmm. serving dinners and so on, that type of thing. And I guess we still depend very largely on those ladies to keep us solvent, to keep us in business, so uh-huh. to speak.
Well, your wife has played a part in that choir, too.
Yes, she has, of course, been the accompanist really the whole time there, and has also played for quite a number of these Sangerfests where we get 200 or more singers together. The largest Sangerfest I think we ever had was one in Seattle in 1951, where we had about 250 singers and had Lauritz Melchior as our guest soloist.
There was quite a large, wasn't there an anniversary of 90th anniversary of choir?
Yes, our own Normanna Male Chorus just celebrated its 90th anniversary 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a special concert
time? We had a concert there where we invited other choruses to come in and join us, so we had, I suppose, about 100 singers at that time.
You have been, along with your musical involvement, you've been a correspondent for the Western Viking. Could you
yes.
tell me something about that?
Well, that was another thing, of course, when the Norwegians and other ethnic groups came to this country and had very little knowledge of the English language. There was a real need for languages, for newspapers in their own language. And I think at one time or another there must have been as many as 150 different Norwegian newspapers published mm-hmm. throughout the country. And some of them had actually more subscribers than any of the papers in Norway.
Oh, is that right?
Now there are, I think, 4 of them still active in the Western Viking in Seattle, and one in Chicago, and one in Brooklyn, New York, and one in Winnipeg, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And you're writing. Do you write now
I write every week. Yes, I have a weekly column in the Western Viking. I've had for quite a number of years now.
Is that mainly about things are going here at
Oh, Florida. Yes, mostly the kind of news from Tacoma, including the college, of course, or university. I always tell quite a bit about the activities, especially the Scandinavian activities at PLU.
And then you've taught Norwegian, too.
Yes, for a while there was really no one around to do that, mm-hmm. so I did teach a first and second year classes in Norwegian at PLU for quite a number of years, I would say.
And, have you been active in a church here in Tacoma?
Oh, yes. It seemed like I started directing church choirs when I was still at Luther College, and I guess in the fall of 1921. and I've been pretty much involved with church choirs ever since that, including such choirs as the Post Chaplain, the choir at the Post Chaplain in Fort Lewis, and the choir at the chapel at the McNeil Island Penitentiary.
Well, when did that form? Could you tell me a little more about that one?
Well, we had been going out there bringing the, you'll have to tell me when you run out of tape.
We're fine here.
We had been going out there every year with the Choir of the West to give a concert for them just before Christmas. And the men out there seemed to appreciate that very, very much. So then when they built their own chapel out there, which was built largely by the inmates themselves, and they were going to dedicate this, so they said, well, they wanted to combine the Protestant and the Catholic choirs, which gave us around 30 voices. And some of the men themselves says, well, this Malmine's been coming out here quite a good deal, directing his own choir. Maybe he'd be willing to come out and direct us, which we did. And my wife came out and helped me, because they had to learn their parts by rote, and it was quite a chore. But it went very, very well. This must have been, 15, 20 years ago. And so when that was all over, well, they should sing for some other doings over there. So the chaplain said, well, how about just taking over here? Mm-hmm. Which I did, and kept it up for a good many years. And after that, I've been visiting the penitentiary visiting inmates on a one-to-one basis right up to the present time. So I've served a long sentence at McNeil Island Penitentiary.
Yes. There's a Christmas, a Norwegian Christmas church service.
Yes, we've had that going for, 13, 14 years. 16 years.
Okay.
I'm being prompted here.
All right.
16 years in the Gloria Dei Lutheran Church, and it's put on jointly by the church, really all the churches in the community, and by the Normanna Male Chorus, which always sings a couple of groups of songs at the service, and everything in Norwegian with the full liturgy, of course, and it becomes quite a nostalgic experience for these people. And some of them say, oh, this is just like the old white-painted church back in the small community in Norway where they grew up, or similar churches in this country which had Norwegian services. So I hope we can keep that going for a good long time.
Is there also a program at Pacific Lutheran at Christmas?
Yes, some years now they have had a very nice Norwegian Christmas service there, which the students put on, and they've last year they had as a guest preacher a man who had just come from Norway, so he wore the traditional Norwegian garb, Norwegian pastor's gown.
Yeah. Have you been involved in any other Scandinavian organizations?
Well, I guess I've been involved in all of them, except I'm not a member of the Daughters of Norway.
No.
I don't know why they don't make me a member.
No.
But other than that, my wife and I are honorary members of both the Sons of Norway and the Northlight Club. We're not Norlendings, we're not from Northern Norway, but we are honorary members of that organization, and of course the Nordmannsforbund, or Norseman's League, I guess they call it in English. Mm-hmm. So we belong to about... I've been president of the local chapter of the Sons of Norway.
On that, the group from Northern Norway, what was that name again?
They call it the Nordlyse, or the Northlight.
And this is for a group of people, the people that live in Northern Norway.
Type of thing, what they call bygdelag, or community organizations, has been very popular in this country almost from the beginning. People who came from one particular area in Norway would get together, and of course it became like a grand family reunion, practically. And so they have those groups from all the different parts of Norway. Mm-hmm. And the most active one around here has been the one from Northern Norway. We have groups in Tacoma and Seattle and Vancouver and Victoria. And then they in turn get together in the spring for a grand reunion. But our group in Tacoma meets once a month.
I haven't asked you anything about your family. Could you tell me about your wife's name and the children's names and where they are?
Yeah, my wife's name is Dorothy. Her maiden name was Bran, so I always referred to her and her sister as my little Bran Flakes. And we have an adopted son and two other sons and a daughter.
Have they been students at Pacific Lutheran?
Yes, not our daughter, but the others have all studied at Pacific Lutheran. Our daughter went to St. Olaf College to just to be a little different.
Uh-huh. Or do they live in this area, or are they?
They're all over the country, Midwest and California, Oregon. Yes, our son Olaf. Of course, they studied. They were pupils in the public school in Norway the year we were there, so they did learn the language very, very well. And then our son Olaf went back there right after he finished high school. They had a group of college students who went over there to build a Bible camp, working together with a group of Norwegian youngsters.
Where was this?
It was near Hamar, Norway, out in the country there, right on the lake, I believe. And it had been a kind of a ski resort, I guess, and they kind of built a chapel for it and that type of thing. And then he ran into some of his old classmates, and they says, "Olaf, you should stay and finish with our class. It'd be their last year of gymnasium, of high school." So he did that and stayed with the Norwegian family, and of course became very Norwegian indeed, uh-huh. And took his artium in Norway. He was the first one, I think, to get it with a music major.
Mm-hmm. What is that word that you...
Artium.
Yes.
Well, it is degree which they get when they finish their gymnasium, which represents 12 years of schooling. But it's not quite the equivalent of a high school. It's when they come to this country, they usually figure they've had equivalent to 2 years of college. Their school year is longer, mm-hmm. and it's more concentrated. So that then entitles them to enroll at the university for further study. And he went back later on, spent a summer over there, and wrote his doctor's thesis on contemporary choral music in Sweden. Someone had already written a similar thesis for Norway, so mm-hmm. he took it in Sweden instead. And they have, of course, distinguished themselves with their in contemporary music. Sweden is very outstanding in that area. So a copy of his thesis is in the PLU library on contemporary Swedish music.
Well, then you have had quite a lot of contact with Norway. Still visiting there and such.
Yes, I have been there in all. This summer will be my 10th visit mm-hmm. to Norway, and on two of those visits I was there for the whole year. Mm-hmm. My wife, it will be her eighth visit to Norway.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any contact with relatives there?
Oh, lots of relatives. Mm-hmm. When I grew up in this country, I didn't know what a uncle or aunt or cousin or grandparent really meant. They were all in Norway. Mm-hmm. So you might say all our relatives, except for the immediate family, they're all in Norway.
Mm-hmm. In this question, how important has your heritage been to you? You've obviously been very involved with the Norwegian culture.
And yeah, I would say it's been really a tremendous element in my life. Of course, Norwegian music by all means, but Norwegian history and literature, Norwegian culture in general. And I've tried to share it with people in this country.
Does your family have reunions? Do you have, when you've been to Sweden, to Norway?
Yes, we, mm-hmm. we also have big get-togethers when we get there, although they're scattered quite a good deal in different parts of the country, too.
Do you have any Scandinavian traditions or habits or folk beliefs that you've kept in your family? Any traditions that would be?
Of course, Scandinavian food preparation, obviously, and the Christmas customs we have tried to carry on very much of the Norwegian type of Christmas celebration.
Could you tell me a little about that? What?
Well, among other little things, that we always serve rice porridge and have an almond concealed therein. And the one who gets that almond gets an extra present on the tree, and that type of a thing. I don't know otherwise.
And you use Norwegian at home. Do you speak some amount of Norwegian at home?
Oh no, we really haven't done that. We should have, I guess, but.
Your children speak Norwegian?
Most of them, I think, are the son, of course, who went back for his second year there. He speaks it very fluently indeed, and like a native. Our relatives in Norway say he speaks better than I do.
Uh-huh.
But the others, I think, understand a good deal of it and probably can still talk it somewhat.
Could you share a prayer or a song or saying in Norwegian?
Well, there's always the Norwegian table prayer, of course, which is a kind of a pretty standard among Norwegian people, and it's very similar to the one used in Sweden, and it's identical with the one used in Denmark. So that one, I suppose, I could give. My wife says that's the first Norwegian. Her first Norwegian lesson was learning that particular prayer. That's I Jesu navn går vi til bords og spiser og drikker på ditt ord. Det Gud til ære og oss til gavn, så får vi mat i Jesu navn. Amen.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to add to that you can think of offhand?
Well, I might be vain enough to mention that I did receive the St. Olaf Medal from His Majesty, the King of Norway.
Oh, yes. Could you tell me some more about that, then?
Well, it's supposedly for contributions to Norwegian culture in this country, and I suppose the work with the Norwegian male chorus is figured in, and as well as the Norwegian historical studies probably figured in quite prominently in that. Mm-hmm. It was presented to me 10 years ago by the Norwegian consul in Seattle. But we later on, of course, in 1975, we were privileged to entertain His Majesty, both in Seattle and in the area here, including PLU. And I was privileged to serve on the committee which welcomed him here. So we had a chance to become quite well acquainted with a very charming individual, His Majesty King Olaf of Norway. Did that kind of wrap it up?
I think it might. And
you just about ran out of rope anyway.
No, I
guess.
Think we're all right. And thank you very much.
Well, you're most welcome. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.